This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Hey, everyone. It's Estelle Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way the doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century. And that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
I'm going to praise him, praise him till I'm gone.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast. Your heavy is the head that wears the crown of musical news and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff.
The blessings come down when the praises go up. The blessings come down. It seems like blessings keep falling in my lap.
That's Blessings from Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book.
Oh, yes, it is.
John Caramonica?
I'm way up. I feel blessed.
What's up?
I'm great. Am I the only one who still cares about a mixtape, Ben?
Apparently not.
Okay, tell me.
A lot of people I know are into this.
Yeah.
Like, into it, almost as a lifestyle. But maybe today you and I can talk about whether they're getting everything that's there.
Some may and some may not. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I think Chance is a rapper who invites different readings. I think if you want to read him, say, secularly, you can. And if you want to read him religiously, you can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think for him, they're the same. But I'm not sure everybody who's listening mainlines him that way.
Well, Coloring Book is Chance the Rapper's third solo mixtape, and it came out recently.
Came out, I believe, on Friday.
End of last week.
When I was in the desert.
Hmm.
Shouts to the desert.
Good place to be in regards to the subject of Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, sure.
Anywhere is a good place to be.
Chance the Succulent.
So, all right, when you wrote about it, you started kind of with Chance the Rapper's, with what Chance maybe sees in Kanye West.
Well, I think it's, okay, so I think we should probably set the table, which is like we're not just talking about Chance today.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Oh.
I think we should talk about
who?
Drake.
Oh, him again. Yeah.
Yeah, your boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Your man.
No, I understand.
Your buddy.
Drake and Chance the Rapper each have a relationship to Kanye West.
Yes, and a thing that I was really struck by in listening to Views, which is the Drake record which came out at the end of April, and Coloring Book, is that they really reflect two different parts of like the Westian paradigm. For many years, for the last like 5 years, you could reasonably say that like the biggest inheritor in the mainstream of Kanye West's self-doubt and vulnerability and all those things that were so integral, especially to the first, say, three Kanye West records, is Drake. And Drake kind of took them and made them his sort of entire toolkit. It's his whole oeuvre is based upon that.
You mean the double thing of I'm really sure about myself and I'm not sure about myself at all.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. But basically the self-doubt underpinning, like the reaction to the self-doubt underpinning the confidence and the swagger,
right.
Basically. Drake's like family-oriented and emotionally-oriented, but you wouldn't necessarily say Drake is spiritually-oriented, at least not in his music.
Yeah.
Kanye identifies himself as an activist. You wouldn't necessarily hear that from Drake. And it's very striking that for the last 5 years, Drake has siphoned off these parts of Kanye's personality and basically built a kind of indestructible pop template with it. I mean, you know, this new record Views, it's the biggest selling record of the year thus far, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, sold more than Beyonce, you know, maybe a million or so in its first week or give or take. It's incredibly impressive. Drake is, you know, the thing that was the outsider idea. Mm-hmm. He has basically completely mainstreamed and has like a whole school of followers.
Yeah.
It's striking how little Chance the Rapper sounds like Drake. Not that he should sound like Drake, but he's living in a different universe altogether.
It's striking in relation to what?
Just in terms of so much of contemporary hip hop bears the stamp of Drake somehow, either explicitly or implicitly.
Sure.
Where you don't get that is in your sort of like your Kendricks of the world. And Chance like falls way more on that side of hip hop, your Kendricks, your Coles, your Chances.
Mm-hmm.
But Chance, specifically in his relationship to Kanye, and he does have a personal and musical relationship to Kanye, has taken from Kanye not what Drake has taken. He's not taken the vulnerability. Mm-hmm. He has not taken the self-doubt. Mm-hmm. He has taken the spirituality. He has taken the agitation. He has taken the community sense.
Mm-hmm.
The things that maybe you don't hear quite as much or in the same ways on later Kanye records, although you can actually argue that, say, Yeezus was like an extremely political record, in a different way than the first couple Kanye albums. But Chance has basically taken what was on Dropout and Late Registration and made his whole oeuvre about those parts of Kanye's thing. And I thought it was interesting for us to talk about those two records together because they really add up to something, which is the West influence over sort of this generation of stars. But they really show how like the Venn diagram basically doesn't overlap.
Okay. Okay. So Drake sees Kanye as a model for emotions to some degree and getting over in the business of culture.
Yes, and success, like in success, you know.
And Chance sees
being
Kanye
a guy.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
He's a guy.
And Chance sees Kanye as sort of a work in progress spiritualist.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
And, you know, what has led up to this. Not sure that we have podcast about Chance the Rapper.
No. We haven't really touched on Chance before.
All right.
Chance is 23. He's from Chicago. You know, Chicago over the last 5 years has had quite a bit of hip hop that's gotten a lot of attention, but it's all been, you know, the drill music variety. Mm-hmm. Gangster rap 1.0, street rap 1.0 stuff, and it's given the town a tough reputation. But it's also a reputation that's in keeping with the terrible violence that happens in Chicago and is an ongoing problem on the South Side, and which has been, you know, something that people protest Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor. It's about bad policing. I mean, this is like a terrible, terrible ongoing thing in Chicago. Chance is coming out of that same cauldron, but has an entirely different approach to how he's going to engage with that stuff. The thing that's probably most striking about Chance, and this is true not just of Coloring Book, but I would say also of Acid Rap and Surf, which is the Donnie Jumper record that came in between Acid Rap and this. Chance is, I believe, an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
And he is deeply spiritual, and there is a real tradition of joy that you hear in his music.
Mm-hmm.
And on this album in particular, and I say album even though it's a mixtape, but you know what I mean. On this album in particular, it's Christian joy.
Yeah.
And Christian-informed joy.
Yeah.
And that is striking, because I don't think Chance is out here trying to compete for Stellar Awards. Like, I don't think, you know, he's not...
Right.
He's not Bitch. He's not
Lecrae. But he's being pretty clear about it, both in lyrics and in sound.
In sound. I mean, this is an exuberant record.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the word I use is jubilant.
Yeah.
These are textures and these are tones and melodies that I basically identify with gospel records.
Yeah.
And not gospel rap records. Like, gospel records. Mm-hmm. I think he has a real whip-smart musical sense. He has found a way to incorporate that into his songs, make them sound relatively poppy or pop-friendly, and still have this incredibly strong message in word and also in structure.
Right.
And I think you could choose to listen to Chance the Rapper and not hear those things because his packaging is very smooth.
Yep.
But I think if you're not hearing those things, you're missing a big part of what
he's
about.
When was the last time you heard a record from the hip-hop tradition that had a
sort of sanctified aspect. And I know this is only, you know, halfway there.
Yeah.
It's part of it. It's not the whole thing.
I think
But still it's there. So when was the last time? And
look,
I don't know if we can count Yeezus.
No. Well, I mean, look, there's definitely an aspect of it on Life of Pablo.
Yeah.
And it's important because I think it's Kanye's, it's his fatherhood record.
Yeah.
It's his new family record. It's his maturing record. But it's also the record where Chance was in the room for a bunch of it.
Yeah.
And that's probably not a coincidence. Like, we don't know how the guiding hand was guiding, but that's not a coincidence. But Ultralight Beam, Chance is on that record, and that record is as religious and spiritual and devotional and godly as anything
right.
on any gospel record.
Right.
You can say Pablo. A thing that I think happened more in, like, the 90s and the early 2000s, I feel like typically, like, dudes you would think of as, like, street-oriented rappers would have songs about their relationships with God, or God would be, like, sort of like a specter presence.
Yeah.
The afterlife, you know, like, death was always sort of present on these records before hip-hop sort of, like, club era, like, basically post in the club.
Yeah.
When, like, a gangster rapper didn't really have to rap about gangster rap stuff, you could just rap, you could be a gangster rapping about parties, basically.
Yeah.
That changed everything.
Yeah.
Before that, I think there always was some God. You know, there's God, you know, there's God in Pac, there's God in Biggie. Like, there's always stuff like that. I think it went away in the 2000s. And I think because of this generation of rappers, it's starting to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And Ye, you know, you listen to Jesus Walks, obviously, on College Dropout. Mm-hmm. It's him basically being like, I'm going to make the hottest mainstream rap song about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was kind of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't like every album there was another effort to do the same exact thing.
No.
I think Chance basically picks up that torch and has been picking up that torch, but on this album specifically, is just like, that's my whole thing.
I can almost see a whole school of rappers following Chance's lead here.
It's one way of looking at it, or alternately, you could, if you look at, say, gospel rap, Lecrae,
D1,
like guys like that,
there
is decent, like, gospel rap. We're not talking about, like, DC Talk anymore, you know? Like, there's, like, legitimate gospel rap.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's pretty decent as far as lyrical structure and as far as verses and production sounds kind of like mainstream rap production.
Yeah.
Like, that's already happening. I don't know if Chance is out here listening to that stuff, but that there is already a bit of this wave. The thing about Chance is he is so effective. He's so effortless in terms of how he raps.
Mm-hmm.
It'd probably be hard for someone to do what he's doing because he's just that good.
Describe how he raps.
Outlandishly good. I mean, first of all, he raps and sings, which is, like, not a new thing anymore, but, like, it's worth mentioning.
Yeah.
A thing that I really like about him is he's not afraid of bending and reshaping his voice into different forms. Like, he'll squeak, or then he'll drag things out, or he'll do interjections.
Can I just make an interjection?
Yeah.
Unlike Drake.
Drake, I think, does it in a different way.
In a more composed way?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I think Drake thinks about the stretches that he's going to make and then executes
them.
I find Drake a very unimprovised kind of.
I think that's right. And also, like, this came up, like, when I did an interview with 40, who was Drake's producer, for our spring preview package before Views came out. And what 40 said in not so many words is Drake is in the studio making Drake records, which is to say we all know what Drake records sound like, which is crazy because 5 years ago, if we were having this podcast 5 years ago, we'd have been like, wouldn't it be weird if these records actually became the norm in hip-hop?
Yeah.
And yet that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They became the norm. So he has a standard to uphold. And the records on Views very much sound like Drake records.
Yes.
I don't think we totally know what Chance records sound like.
Yeah.
But what are their elemental, basic constituent parts?
Yeah.
Stop, start, flow, scratchy but smooth, interesting melodic runs inside the verses, ecstatic production. Sometimes slightly hokey. This is a problem I had with Surf, which is the record, the Donnie Trump record that came in between, which is his collective. That's his crew. That's like the extended crew. Chance is, best I can tell, kind of in a musical theater and Broadway. Like, he's on the cover of Complex with Lin-Manuel Miranda right now. You know, this is maybe not my favorite Chance impulse. So there are moments, and it happened more on Surf than on this record, where it's real heavy in that direction. It's very, like, eyebrow arching. It's a little, like, it's tough to lose yourself inside of. what I like about what he's done on this record is even though many of the same constituent pieces are there, somehow the hokiness has been, like, kneaded out of them.
Yeah.
Like, you still have the horns, you still have the choirs, you still have all these sort of basic parts, but they are not overpowering the way that they were on that record. Mm. So he has found a way to have this sort of, like, tenor of pure joy, but to have content that is both spiritual, in some cases street-oriented, and in all cases incredibly artfully written.
Yeah.
And still sound joyful.
Yes.
Which is crazy. It's just like, it's just, it's real high wire act.
Do you have the full list of credits of who, you know, who produced what?
No, they didn't release the credits. I mean, they're online. You can sort of, you can piece together stuff online.
Yeah.
But best I can tell, they did not release the credits. Right. Same with the Drake record.
Just for...
Eventually they did with the Drake record.
Yeah, right. I'm going to be interested in that when that is finally all in one place to comb through it and see. Because it's like that music has many parts.
And again, he has a crew of people who I think did do much of the production on this record as well. I think there's a shared aesthetic at work with like a bunch of that team.
Yeah.
So it's not like he reached out to 10 familiar producers to make that work. But what is interesting about this is you look at the guests on this record.
I was just about to ask, I mean, since we're talking about the other people who worked on it, that is quite an amazing list.
Not only is it really striking for its diversity, I mean, you have Justin Bieber, you have Young Thug, you have Jay Electronica, you have Lil Yachty, you have Jeremiah, you have Francis and the Lights. You know, these are all people who don't normally live in the same room, or they live in nearby rooms, maybe not the same room. But what's really striking is Chance is versatile enough that those rappers and singers, they sound like them. They don't sound like they're trying to switch themselves up to be good on a Chance record. If anything, Chance is flexible enough to like be on like the song, which is called Mixtape, with Thug and Yachty. Chance sort of is doing a Thug flow. And then there's a song later with Future. And it's like he's not doing a Future flow, but he's not doing a flow that's incompatible with what's Future. With
and
what's Future
and how does he do this and not lose his identity?
He just
that's something we talk about from time to time.
Look, he just obviously has a stronger backbone than you or I. You know what I mean? Like, he has a very, very committed vision. Best I can tell, he's just an incredibly affable guy.
Helps.
It probably does. I wrote about this last summer when I was in Chicago for the Pitchfork Festival.
Yeah.
One of the nights of the festival, I left early so I can go see Taylor Swift at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
As you do, because, like, why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the, like, the section in the middle, you know, of the stadium watching. And, like, I'm sort of, like, looking at this person to my left. And I'm like, it kind of looks familiar. It kind of pieced together. And I was like, pretty sure that's Chance the Rapper sitting in the same section. And like, huh, that's okay. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. And sure enough, like, the next day or later that night on Instagram, it's, like, a picture of him and Taylor. And he's like, thanks, Taylor. You're welcome in Chicago anytime. Like, da-da-da-da. And I'm just like, how wild is that? You know, like Chance the Rapper, who is not on a major label, who, you know, is basically operating in his own little ecosystem.
Yeah.
But not.
Right.
Because here he is. He's can make that friend connection and he can make the connections that again. He got Jay Electronica on a record. And Jay Electronica can't even get on Jay Electronica records.
Right.
To say nothing of somebody else's songs.
Yeah.
That's notable.
Yeah.
He got Bieber on a song. He's also on a song on Bieber's album.
Yeah.
So like that's a trade. He got Yachty on a rap. I mean, this Yachty verse is outrageously good. Oh,
so he's got
shouts to Yachty.
Valences.
So many.
All over the place.
He's polyvalent.
They're just popping out of him.
He's the most polyvalent.
Which, as you said earlier, proves a strong backbone.
I think so.
Maybe that's all it proves, you know? But that is a lot.
And also a musical gift. I mean, like, it's not, I mean, you know, he's not backbone strong and talent weak.
Yeah.
He's backbone strong and talent strong.
Well, let's blip ourselves over to Drake again for one second. And
who also has a strong backbone, but of a different
Let's
sort.
Talk about his backbone after we hear a little bit of Feel No Ways.
Yes. I tried with you. It's more to life than sleeping in and getting with you. I had to let go of us to show myself what I could do. That just didn't sit right with you. Yeah, and now you're trying to make me feel away on purpose. Now you're throwing it back in my face on purpose. Now you're talking down on my name.
John Caramonica, I want you to put your hands on Drake's back.
Wow.
I want you to feel his backbone. What are you feeling?
Like I said, Drake has a strong...
Start from the top.
Oh, now, wow.
And work your way down.
This is turning into like a self-help podcast, which I'm into. Drake also has a strong backbone, but what Drake is not doing at this stage in his career is really being as experimental as what Chance is doing. And also, like we said a few minutes ago, there is this idea of what a Drake song, in quotation marks, sounds like.
Yeah.
And so Views is kind of like the ne plus ultra of Drake songs.
Yeah.
In my mind, it's not his most lyrically progressive record. It's probably not my favorite Drake record.
Yes.
I think Drake of 2 years ago was interesting. And actually, here's the thing I didn't get to write about when I wrote about Drake a few weeks ago. Here's the thing that I did not put in the piece, but I think is important. And I don't think anybody has said yet. When Drake put out If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, which is the mixtape that was for sale last year, and then followed it with the Future tape, What a Time to Be Alive, the Future collaboration. There was a lot of thinking of, like, this is Drake segueing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a detour.
Sure.
But, as 40 said when I interviewed him, we're getting back to Drake.
He went back to Drake. And that record with Future was, as we discussed earlier, a pretty future-y record.
It's a pretty future record.
But now we're back to Fortress Drake.
Yes. However, here's my hot take. That is actually who Drake is now. He's not Drake as we have known him. He's this other guy who, when they said he was like on vacation doing these records.
Yeah.
So like basically this isn't Drake. It's Drake, but it's not Drake.
Yeah.
And we're coming back to Drake, to OG Drake. I feel like it's possible that is now Drake, because those records are very, very reflective of what a rapper who is at the top of the game, that rapper makes those kind of records.
You've confused me totally.
Tell me why.
Who is the real Drake?
Well, I think the real Drake is shifting. I think the argument that Views is a return to, like, essential Drake is actually a fabrication.
Yeah.
Even though it's the convenient narrative, I think it's a fabrication.
Is it a conscious fabrication?
I'm not sure.
Is he fooling himself?
I don't know the answer to that.
I know we can't get inside the minds of artists, but you can get closer than many of us with Drake.
I don't know the answer. I honestly don't. I've thought a lot about this, as you probably can suspect. As you would suspect, I've spent a fair amount of time thinking about this. I don't know, but I do know that once I was listening to Views after I'd written about it, you know, just listening to it in the car, like just driving around with it, thinking about it, listening to it in concert with What a Time to Be Alive and If You're Not Reading This, I started to realize that we were all waiting for Drake to come back to Drakeness.
Yeah.
And what he was actually telling us last year is Drakeness is a new thing. And in many ways, this album is a step to the side. I'm beginning to believe that his true path runs through those albums, not that those albums were the weird detour that you take off the highway before you get on the highway.
I feel like I'm playing 3D chess with a ghost.
Great. Good. Good. Checkmate.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So you say. Let's talk about the record in an evaluative sense,
yeah.
John.
It's not. Forget
about whether it's the real Drake or not. What do you think about it?
But I can't. Yes. It's not my favorite Drake album. Mm. I think it's a very good record that does the job of putting Drake songs into the world.
Yeah.
Cap quotation mark Drake songs. I think it's good. I think that it's not his most lyrical, even though there's bars on there.
Yeah.
They're sprinkled out, but there's bars on there. There's flows on there.
Yeah.
All the things that 40 sort of said are all true.
Yeah.
They're just sprinkled throughout the record.
Yeah.
Part of the thrill of Drake circa 2010, circa 2012, is the thrill of the new. He's sui generis. He's
okay,
basically inventing
so
a path.
Let's get back
and
to
now
this.
He's just he's running the car down the same path.
One could listen to this record and say, he's reduced himself. He's stepped into the fortress. But you are suggesting that, no, this is a work in progress. This is a creation.
I think it's not so much that this is a creation. It's that this feels now like a reference to a time that is not the present. It feels like a reference to 2013 or 2014. If you assess Drake in a linear fashion, mm-hmm. 2015 was a radical change. And this feels like a detour back to 2014 or 2013. But Drake sounds comfortable on those 2015 records. Mm-hmm. He sounds comfortable on those Tough Guy records. Mm-hmm. Why does he sound comfortable? He's the number one guy in the game. Mm-hmm. Being aggrieved is actually part of that role. And I think the initial read on those records was like, well, you know, Drake's just kind of like, he's just spazzing out right now. But actually, I think it's very reflective of where he is in the sort of ecosystem.
Can you lay out for me a formal analysis of the album cover in relation to what we've just been talking about?
A sad man at the top of the world.
Yeah. Is that it?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it seem that way?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a juicy paradigm.
Of course, you know,
it goes back a long time.
Yeah,
it's a great story to tell.
Yeah, I mean, well, also what's funny is if you compare the album cover to the actual booklet art, like the booklet art is like very much like Take Care booklet art, which is just like, I'm just like this, I'm wearing the most expensive coats and I have the meanest dogs and my friends are like the swaggiest guys
on
the planet.
Well, that's inside the apartment shot.
Right.
Right.
But the cover
it's from a helicopter.
Yes, I run this city and look how lonely I am sitting on it, you know. He's like Linus on the fence.
Oh, but we're in the helicopter.
Well, yeah. Well,
in a way.
Well, first of all, we're looking up at him. I'm not even sure if we're in a helicopter.
Oh, are we looking up
at him? Yeah, like technically I think we're looking up.
Yeah.
And you see him.
We're in another building, but we're not as high.
Yes. But also, he's surveying.
We're competitors, but we're not as high.
He's surveying, but he's sad. And that's the takeaway of that cover. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you hear it. This is why he doesn't talk about it quite as much on the records from last year. But like, you know, there is this new Toronto wave of like post-Drake, you know, your Tory Lanez and
sure.
guys like this. Drake's feeling a way about that. And they're feeling a way about Drake.
He has created it.
They're his babies.
Yeah.
It's Drake wave.
Yes.
They're his kids. But not all your kids are in line. Mm-hmm. And I think Drake is sitting on the top of the CN Tower. I think that's the building, the CN Tower, and surveying what he's wrought. And feeling like it is just me now.
You know what he lacks?
A scarf.
And faith.
Yes. I mean, I think Drake, that's not
a
how
scarf.
Drake.
It does look cold up there.
Yeah, it looked cold, right? He has a big coat, though. He has a big coat.
Yeah.
Look, Drake is not a faith-based artist. He's an emotionally driven artist, but he's not a faith-based artist. And even Drake was never about joy. Like, Drake was about self-laceration and you know, basically exposing his problems as a means of getting to your problems, exposing your problems as a means of highlighting his problems. Mm. That's the complete it's a complete opposite principle to what Chance is doing. Mm. Chance is literally rapping and singing about violence in Chicago in this serious but also exuberant manner that I associate with gospel. You listen to gospel, gospel is about pain. Gospel is about redemption and survival narratives.
Yeah.
But it's done in this incredibly orchestrated and high-energy fashion.
Mm.
That's the tradition Chance is belonging to, and that's what he borrowed from Kanye, because Kanye knows that tradition.
Mm.
That's part of Kanye. And part of the reason that's part of Kanye is because Kanye is a producer and a rapper. So I think a lot of Kanye's references don't just come from, like, I like this guy's flow or I like this singer's perspective. It's I like the sound of this.
Yeah.
I like how gospel sounds. I want to put a little gospel in my music. Drake's a rapper, and Drake's a rapper about his feelings. His worldview is what's in his heart and his head. And I think Chance's worldview is what's happening in the world.
The other song from the Chance the Rapper album that you chose to go out with
mm-hmm.
is Summer Friends.
Yes.
And can you kind of sketch that song
out? Sure. Well, that's actually what I was just thinking about when I was talking about Chance talking about basically tough things, mm-hmm. but talking about them in a manner that has some positive energy to it. I mean, you know, this is a part memoir about childhood, but at the same time, it's also about how there is no summertime in Chicago anymore because of the violence.
Mm-hmm.
So summertime is basically it's a moot concept. It's mm-hmm. it's a failed concept. The idea that he's delivering this in a sort of not a preacher tone, but it's like kind of a praise song, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the family.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is what makes Chance special, and it's why I think he's resonating. I think especially in a time where hip hop is moving in a direction of more self awareness, more socially conscious work. Chance is being able to bring that home without being pedantic.
So you mean he can do two things at once? He's the
the archetypal guy who can think two opposing thoughts at the same time, you know? He can do bleak realism and possess joy.
Yeah, I would say opposing sentiments. Yeah. Not thoughts, but sentiments, yeah.
And similarly, the musical thing that I picked up from this song immediately was the interplay of tempo between his rapping and the falsetto singing going on above it, which is half time or slower than his rapping, which is very cool.
Yeah, and the thing that Chance is doing, and again, this is where the Drake-ness of Drake becomes potentially an obstacle, is Drake has a tempo and an approach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Drake switches between singing and rapping too, but it's deployed by now a rhythm that you understand because you've heard a bunch of Drake songs before. So you can almost sense them. You can almost anticipate the moves before they come. Mm. Chance is strange. Like, Chance, like, comes in and out of stuff in unusual moments. Like, he dives in and speeds up and up goes, you know, pitches up and pitches down. And it's not so much that he's trying a bunch of different stuff. It's that I think he's responding to the bug in his head. And if the bug in his head is saying, rap like this, you know, he'll rap like that. And if it's saying, you gotta go like this, he'll do that. And that, to me, is incredibly refreshing. It's hard to listen to this album, religious or not, and not come away with a dose of optimism.
There's another collaborator with this Chance record, if you want to call it that, which is Apple Music.
Yes. How about that? Mm. So Coloring Book is, for now, an Apple Music exclusive. It's a streaming Apple Music exclusive. He said online the other day that it will eventually be on Spotify. Chance is not selling this record. He doesn't intend to sell this record. It will be free for life, forever. But it's interesting because, you know, Chance makes a lot of hay out of the fact that he's not signed to a label. I mean, he makes a lot of hay of it in interviews, makes a lot of hay of it on this record. It's a lot of songs about the bad things that labels do. It feels like a weird, like, 1997 backpack record. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, oh, major labels.
Yeah.
And we're in a weird moment in rap, especially, where everybody's like, major labels are great. Everyone from Young Thug to Drake is like on a major label and having a great time.
But he's proclaiming indie cred.
Right. So it's an interesting strategy. Is that really indie? I understand you make the records on your own, but obviously you have some kind of arrangement with Apple Music.
SST, what's the difference?
Yes, well, true. Maybe there's the SST / Apple is what it is. So that's striking on its own that he has this relationship with Apple, which complicates the indie narrative a little bit. But also, Drake has a relationship with Apple.
Yeah,
it's a more traditional marketing arrangement. And Drake's Views was also an Apple exclusive when it first came out. But Drake's on a label. You know, Drake is on Young Money / Cash Money / Republic, Universal Republic. So you begin to wonder, like, well, okay, here are two people who are basically presenting but seemingly opposite paradigms, but they are, in fact, buoyed by the same money, or at least the same man and woman power.
Well, John Caramonica, thank you for coming. We're going to close out with Chance the Rapper's Summer Friends from his record Coloring Book, his mixtape Coloring Book. I summer don't get no shine no more. I summer die, I summer time, don't got no time no more. Summer friends don't stay. Summer friends just stay. Hey. Stay around, yeah. Summer friends. Summer friends don't stay. Summer friends don't stay. Hey. Stay around, yeah. That's our show, and thank you for listening. You can read John Caramonica on the subject of Chance the Rapper's Coloring Book and Drake's Views at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Pedro Rosado and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Make sure that you find some time for yourself to subscribe to our show in any way that you know how, in any way that you can imagine, through the different portals.
So many means.
And experiential entry points.
Am I the only one that still cares about podcasts?
And we'll see you next week. Make the whole song, do whatever I say. 79, 79, 79, babe. 79, 79, 79, babe. Some of my homegirls got lost in the paperwork.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.